Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Only sports teams with winning records should have public funding for new stadiums. That's the idea behind legislation put forth by a Democratic state senator who opposes a $600 million public handout for the Cleveland Browns. It's the latest volley in an ongoing debate about who should fund stadium complexes for sports teams. With a Republican supermajority in the Ohio legislature, that bill isn't likely to go anywhere. But the Ohio Senate has a new game plan in mind. Joining us now is Jeremy Pelzer, chief politics reporter for Cleveland.com. Welcome to All Sides, Jeremy.
Great to be here.
So, Jeremy, the budget process is ongoing. It won't be wrapped up until June. The governor's budget proposal and the House, the Ohio House, both passed versions that include funding for the Browns Stadium, but they take different approaches. Why has this new stadium for the Browns become such a hot button issue when it comes to the budget?
Well, for one reason is that there's a history, particularly in Cleveland, about the issue of the Browns leaving town. Obviously, in the 1990s, the original Cleveland Browns packed up and moved to Baltimore. And now there's the prospect of the Browns leaving downtown Cleveland and going, well, not as far as Baltimore, but to suburban Brook Park. And so there's that's still an open wound in Cleveland. And then add on to that, there's this been general public blowback against the idea of public funding for stadiums in general, especially because so many of these stadium projects have turned out to be economically not a great investment for government. There's a lot of money sunk into these stadiums. And the Brown Stadium would, if they built it, it would be $2.4 billion. It would be one of the most expensive stadiums in world history. I mean that's true, but at the same time, it's also all in line with a couple of other stadiums, like in Las Vegas, where they're opening a stadium, and Nashville as well. So this would be right now. The Browns are downtown. They have played there since the very late 90s. At their current stadium, Huntington Field, and they want to build not only a stadium out by Cleveland's airport, they want to build a development around it too. And that's key to this whole operation, because this is not just a stadium deal. This is a development deal where you take fairly cheap land by the airport and you turn it into a destination. And so you're going to make a lot of money by the owners of the Browns.
Not me.
And it's going to be just not a stadium, but a whole development.
Now, Governor DeWine envisions raising $600 million by doubling the sports gambling tax. That's what he had in his proposed budget. But why didn't the House go along with that idea? Why'd they come up with their own plan?
Well, first of all, I should say, so here's what the Browns are proposing. So it's $2.4 billion, and the owners, Jimmy and Dee Haslam of the team, say, we'll cover half of that. We'll pony up $1.2 billion. Then we want the state to cover $600 million, and then we want the county to cover $600 million. And so right now you're talking about that $600 million that they want from the state. And right now the talk doesn't seem to be if the state will give that money, but how the state will give that money. It seems there's not enough opposition to make the question of whether we should do it. The only question is how to do it. So what the governor proposed is, a couple of years ago, the state created a tax not on sports bets themselves, but sports betting companies' revenue. And it's 20% now. The governor wants to raise that to 40%. And that hike, that money from the hike, would go to create a permanent source of funding, because the Browns aren't the only team looking for money for stadium projects. You have the Cincinnati Bengals looking to do an $800 million renovation of their stadium. FC Cincinnati is trying to do a renovation and development, mixed-use development around their stadium. Most stadiums on average last about 30 years, so that means you have Nationwide Arena coming up, Rocket Mortgage in Cleveland, where the Cavaliers play. You have a bunch of stadiums coming up in the next few years that'll probably need money as well. And the governor says, well, let's create a permanent source of funding. So it's not just every time a team needs money, we'll send their lobbyists to Columbus and try to get stuff from state lawmakers from general revenue.
Now, a lot is being said of this $600 million. I know there's some educators out there who have been pretty vocal about this funding in wake of changes in how K-12 schools are funded. There's just a lot of people out there saying there's other things that can be done with this money, right? And they don't want the state to be involved.
Sure. So then that was the governor's plan. What the House is moving forward now with now, and we'll see if that holds up in the final budget plan, is to issue it instead via bonds. So they would issue $600 million in state-issued bonds. And this is what the Browns prefer. The Browns have asked lawmakers to do this instead of what DeWine is proposing. And the bonds would, under the Browns plan, would be repaid with tax revenue raised from the deal. So all the new income tax and sales taxes and commercial activities taxes from this stadium and the surrounding development site would go to pay off these bonds. Now, the $600 million question is whether that is actually going to be enough money to pay off these bonds. Because as the governor's noted, when you include all the interest and all the costs associated with this, this is coming up on $1 billion. The Browns have provided a study, and they haven't provided all the details of that study, but they're basically they're saying, hey, we ran the numbers and it's going to be more than enough. Trust us, it's going to be more than enough to cover these bonds. And even if you don't trust us, the Haslams personally now are offering to pony up a $50 million escrow account that over time, they say, would with interest grow to about $200 million. So if for whatever reason, they say, if these tax revenues can't cover the cost of these bonds, well, then you can dip into this escrow account. Even so, is that going to be enough money? We haven't seen any independent financial analyses. The state has one, but they haven't released it yet. So we don't know if that's going to be enough to cover the bonds or not. So meanwhile, now this is heading over to the Senate. So the Senate now apparently is looking at some sort of hybrid deal. So they would raise the they would take DeWine's tax on sports gaming companies, but then they would use that to fund the bonds. So it'd be like a hybrid deal. And it's up in the air how it's going to land. But again, the big thing is not if they're going to do this, but how. They're just working out the details of how.
Yeah, but it also sounds like in some of those scenarios you said that it could take years and years and years to be able to pay back the bonds, to have the money for this. And so it's almost like if you say a stadium lasts 30 years, it's going to be like just by the time they have the money to repay it, they're going to need to renovate it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You pay off the mortgage in your house and all of a sudden you got to buy another house.
And everything breaks, right? Yes. Okay. So this is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. And we're talking about using public money to build a new stadium for the Cleveland Browns. And with us in the studio is Jeremy Pelzer, chief politics reporter for Cleveland.com. Now, I mentioned at the top of the show, there's this legislation that would say that they would provide public funding only to teams that have a winning season. So meaning they're above 500 for three of the last 5 years. This senator, state senator Bill DeMora, introduced the bill, calling it the Public Access to Professional Sports Act. It says that teams have to have a winning record to receive public funding. Is this a stunt or do you think it's serious legislation?
Bill DeMora is one of the more colorful senators at the Ohio State House. He's introduced a number of bills, one of which would was in reaction to the blowback against Peacock, only getting rights to air a Ohio State Buckeyes game, but only one. So people were miffed that they would have to sign up for Peacock.
For one game, yes.
And so Bill DeMora introduces a lot of these bills that don't go anywhere.
Well, he has a point, though.
It reflects especially Democrats' unease with providing this money. And I think it reflects a wider public sentiment, which is the Browns are terrible. Why are we going to give them money? And you can decide for yourself whether, you know, that factors into whether the money should be given at all. But people think, hey, if we don't have a quarterback, why are we talking about a new stadium?
Right. I ask that question myself sometimes. So at the City Club of Cleveland last week, Senator Jerry Serino, who chairs the Finance Committee, made what appeared to be a joke. Let's listen.
I had a meeting with Jimmy Haslam not too long ago, and he tried to start the conversation about the project, and I said, time out. That's a sports thing, you know. And I said, Jimmy, forget about the stadium. I just want to go to the Super Bowl before I die. And he said, I can't make any promises. I said, well, then neither can I.
I mean, he was joking. Obviously, he was trying to play to the crowd there. But there's something to that.
Sure. At the end, when he said, basically, he's saying, I'm not making any promises, you know, take the joke away. And so it just shows there is a diversity of opinion at the State House about this. And there is no, there is some skepticism about this. At the same time, again, I think there's enough support that the only question now is how to do it and not if to do it.
Now, the city and county officials up in the Cleveland area are still trying to get the Browns to stay put, in their current location and not move to Brook Park. Here's Cuyahoga County Executive Chris, Chris Ronayne, talking on Cleveland 19's Stadium Showdown show.
We just don't think the Brook Park solution is one that's a working solution. It's too risky. So we could keep saying to the Cleveland Browns Haslam Sports Group, come home. You know, come home to your historic home. We've got land to develop around it. We've got a lakefront to transform.
Now, so that brings up the point that you made earlier, that they're waiting on the county to give some money to this too. And the county's not happy about the new location.
And that's the weak link in this financial chain right now, which is, so again, the team, the owners would put up half, the state would put up a quarter, and then the last quarter would come from the county. And right now, the county doesn't seem to be willing at all to give this money. And that's an unresolved question. Where is this money going to come from? I mean, we know where the Browns want it to come from. They want to raise the county bed tax. They want to put a $6 car rental fee. The rest would come from Brook Park taxes. So we know what they want. But then as you just played, the county executive and other county officials are very leery about approving this, especially, as you said, because they don't want the team to leave the city of Cleveland. The mayor of Cleveland, Justin Bibb, has been adamant about, hey, we tried to negotiate with the team. They haven't operated in good faith, but we want you guys to stay. There's a perfectly good stadium, and we can talk about renovations. And the Browns, for their part, have said that if this state funding doesn't go through, then they wouldn't move. They would just go back to Huntington Field and seek renovations, and that would be their plan B.
Is there, in that plan B, is there talk of doming the old stadium?
There's the current stadium cannot be domed, the way it's built. But they can do a bunch of renovations to it. And so that's a plan B. But I want to say, like, the Browns have made up their mind about what they want, and what they want is to move to Brook Park.
And when you say the Browns, do you mean the Haslams have made up their mind?
I mean the Haslams and everyone who is on their payroll.
I see.
From the GM down is supportive of moving to Brook Park.
So the city owns the land where the current stadium is, but the Haslams would own everything if they do the Brook Park project. Is that right?
That's not right.
No, that's not right. Okay.
Because it's not in the city. It's not in Cleveland. It's just south of Cleveland. It would be run. The stadium would be owned by this development authority, and it would be like this governmental entity that is separate from the city or in the county. So it would effectively the team would run the stadium and lease it, but it would be. And to be honest, it's a little nebulous.
Okay,
something I need to learn more about, but it would be owned by this this developmental authority.
Okay.
That would be different than the city or county or state.
Okay. And Governor DeWine is worried, you mentioned this earlier, about giving a handout to the Browns, whether it be in bond form or however it comes out, because it would bring all the other teams in the state a calling, which has happened. There was news yesterday that the Cincinnati Bengals and Hamilton County have reached an agreement of $184 million in upgrades to Paycor Stadium. But the Bengals did want $350 million. House Speaker Matt Huffman wasn't a fan of the Bengals' plan. Do you know why?
He said the Browns actually came to him. This is Matt Huffman, Speaker of the House. He said the Browns came to him a couple years ago with a similar proposal, and he shot them down because he doesn't want general revenue. He doesn't want the state to just give out the money. He's okay with doing it via bonds, especially because this is in the con- I think a lot of lawmakers are seeing this in the context not of stadium deal, but this is an economic development deal. They see it in line with, well, we gave all these tax incentives and state grant money to Intel to come near Columbus and Anduril south of Columbus and all these other projects. Well, this would be the state's second largest economic development deal in the state's history, and it just so happens to be a stadium in the surrounding area. And so they see it like that, this is an economic development opportunity that will pay off in the long run. Now, the Browns are saying, according to their projections, that this would result in the state having more than $1 billion after it's all said and done to do whatever they want with it, because mm-hmm. it would develop, once you pay off the bonds, that leftover tax revenue just goes to the state, sales tax, income tax, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, but again, that's what they're saying, and there's no other independent analysis to say whether that is correct or not.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there's a lot up in the air, a lot to wait for. So we have to see what the Senate proposal is, see if they can, the House and Senate can agree, see if Mike DeWine goes for it. Right. We have a lot of things to happen before the budget's due in June. Right.
Yeah. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Yes. There's a sports analogy in there or some sort of pun that I can't come up with, but you know.
I think we're on second and 10 right now.
All right. There we go.
It's not first and 10, but yeah. It's not fourth down yet.
I'm like, are we on the 50-yard line? I don't know where we are. We are somewhere. But thank you, Jeremy Pelzer, chief politics reporter for Cleveland.com. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks a lot.
And coming up, we're going to talk about other stadium projects across the country. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Ohio teams aren't the only ones looking to build new sports stadiums. The Chicago Bears play in one of the oldest stadiums in the country, built 100 years ago. They're considering building a new stadium on a parking lot next to its current home, Soldier Field. Other projects in the works for the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Kansas City Royals, the Oakland A's, and the Tampa Bay Rays. The list goes on. Joining us to talk about what's driving this building boom is journalist Neil DeMoss, co-author of the book Field of Schemes, How the Great Stadium Swindle Turns Public Money into Private Profit. He's also editor of the website fieldofschemes.com. Welcome to All Sides, Neil.
Hey, glad to be here.
So in your in a recent post on Field of Schemes, you called the Cleveland Browns Stadium, quote, a shakedown. You mentioned how Republican senators are working on a hybrid plan, and which would merge the ideas that are already on the table from the governor and the Ohio House. And you call it a big, tangled mess of political gamesmanship. Is what's playing out in Ohio unusual, in your opinion?
I mean, you know, every unhappy stadium deal is unhappy in its own way, but it's not that unusual, right? I mean, we typically see, you know, a team owner or political allies of a team owner throwing out some sort of plan for here's how we're going to fund public money for a private stadium, and then it gets kicked around a bunch, right? Mm-hmm. And so another politician will say, no, we don't want to do it that way. We want to do it this way. And that's sort of what you're seeing here now with the Brown situation. And what's weird is that you've got, two different proposals. One is to take the money that is collected in taxes from Browns fan spending, basically, that otherwise would go into the general revenue, and spend that, give that back to the Browns. The other is to increase taxes on gambling, sports gambling, and instead of collecting that for the general fund, give that back to the Browns. So either way, it's public tax money that would go to the Browns. And the debate has not been, should we give $600 million in Ohio tax dollars to the Browns, but which $600 million should we give? So, the details of, who's on which side is one thing, but I feel like, a little bit of that is being missed. And, you know, at the same time, the Browns owner is, you know, Jimmy Haslam is saying, well, we're not going to move out of Ohio regardless. So it seems like the state has a little bit more leverage than they seem to think they do.
Well, why are so many teams building new stadiums, and not just stadiums, but like massive complexes? Do you know what's behind driving this trend?
Yeah, I mean, this has really been a trend for, over 30 years now. It's, longer than I've been writing about this, going back into the late 80s and early 90s. And what really drove it was a couple things. One was discovering that, you could build stadiums that weren't just stadiums, right? But that were stadiums and hotels and pulled pork sandwich restaurants and all these other things that you could make all kinds of other money off of, and surrounding, ballpark districts, so you could use as excuse to do a big development. The more important thing was the team owners realized, oh, unlike in the past, even into the 70s and 80s, when either the private owner would pay for it, or the public would pay for it, but the private owner would pay it back in rent, or a share of parking revenues or ad revenues or something like that. They realized, oh, we can get the public to pay for all of this. And that really kicked off in the late 80s and has not stopped since then. So, I think the reason why you see so many teams demanding new stadiums, and demanding them fairly quickly, right? 20, 30 years down the road, not the, 70 or 80 years that it used to be, is that there's money to be had, right? And if you're a rich sports owner, you would be stupid not to accept $600 million if it's sitting out there.
Now, in January, you had a post where you advocated for local governments to hire professional help in negotiating with these sports teams. Do you feel like some of these maybe county officials are just out of their league with working on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very clear that the sports team owners and the leagues, hire the best lawyers and negotiators and lobbyists and all this stuff to, to try to figure out how to sell their side of things. And what we've seen is that cities and counties, are typically at, just, their heads are underwater on this stuff, right? I mean, I talked to a guy who was negotiating the for the St. Louis Rams when they were, moving from Los Angeles to St. Louis years ago, and were trying to negotiate for a lease, and they were saying, well, should we put this in? Should we demand this? Should we demand that? And the guy said, might as well ask for everything, right? Maybe the city will give us more than we think. And the city just said yes to everything because they didn't understand, right? They're not sports experts. They're not sports business experts. They don't know what they're giving up. So I definitely do think that, yeah, it's good to have some professional help, and to have some people who can say to you, look, here's the leverage you have. Here's the leverage the people on the other side of the table have. And here's what you should be willing to settle for. Because otherwise, it's way too easy for, again, these people who have been doing stadium deals across the country to come into your city or your county and say, this makes sense. This is how it works everywhere. And say, okay, I guess so. We don't know any better.
Now, there was news just yesterday that the Cincinnati Bengals and Hamilton County have reached an agreement to pay $184 million for upgrades to Paycor Stadium. The Bengals had wanted $350 million for renovations, but they're not seeking a whole new stadium. You wrote about it this morning, and you called it just plain weird. What did you make of this plan?
So the weird part is that the Bengals have the most team-friendly lease probably in all of sports, right? Even compared to the St. Louis Rams, who got everything, the Bengals really got everything. They've got, a clause that says that Hamilton County has to pay for any upgrades that other teams get, and including a list of things that includes holographic replay systems if they are ever invented. So
Wait, that's written in there? What?
written into the lease. So so Hamilton County is in this situation where they obviously don't want to throw a whole lot of money at the Bengals, but they also would love to get this lease over with. And the Bengals owners have the right to extend it for, I think, another 10 years, like 5 2-year lease extensions. So all there's been this sort of dance back and forth where the county keeps saying, well, we'll do this, but if you give us a new lease and wipe out the old lease. And the strange part about this one is, yes, the Bengals would be paying for about a third of the costs. The NFL would be paying another third, and the county would be paying about a third. The problem is the county doesn't really get anything in return because the old lease stays in place. So you're not getting a lease extension. You're not getting out from under this state-of-the-art clause that requires the county to keep, doing improvements. And I guess the idea is, well, this will be the first step towards a bigger redevelopment, you know, and renovation of the stadium that will be paid for by someone. And, you know, it actually says, you know, we'll be looking for third parties in the MOU, right? It says we'll be looking for third parties to help fund this, which, you know, I mean, means the state, right? There's not a whole lot of other third parties out there.
You know, they're like, so it's a very, very strange step. Hello, Governor. We hear you give money to the Browns. We have a better, better record than them. Hello. Here we are. Yeah.
Low bar.
Yes. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about using public money to help fund new stadiums. And this is an issue that is not just unique to Ohio. We're talking with journalist Neil DeMoss, co-author of the book Field of Schemes, How the Great Stadium Swindle Turns Public Money into Private Profit. He also has a website, fieldofschemes.com. So let's talk about one of those other projects. There's a project... projects around the country are running into obstacles, but in Washington, D.C., there's a group of activists that have launched an effort to block the construction of a football stadium. The organizers of the campaign call it Homes, Not Stadiums, and they're seeking to put a question on the ballot that would prohibit the construction of professional sports stadiums on this 174-acre waterfront campus in Northeast Washington. So, in Washington, D.C., the mayor this week is touting the new stadium as a way to lure the Commanders back into the area. She said it would be an economic boom. Is this, Neil, is this sometimes there's part of these negotiations between teams and communities. They're leveraging the new stadium. There's a threat of leaving. There's so much wrapped up in this. What do you make of this Homes Not Stadiums campaign?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you know, in terms of the threat of leaving or the promise of an economic boon, that's absolutely standard from the playbook, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you always will hear either this team's going to leave or, you know, you don't want to find out if the team's going to leave if, you know, if this stadium doesn't happen, or you'll never get the team back in the case of D.C., right, where the team left. As for an economic boon, I mean, there are innumerable economic studies now at this point that have tried to find what the positive impact is of sports teams or sports stadiums. And they have found that the number is somewhere between nothing and hardly anything. you know, maybe a sports team has the same economic impact as like a mid-sized supermarket, but it's certainly nothing that's going to get a return of, you know, on your investment of like hundreds of millions of dollars like DC is being asked for. So in terms of this, in terms of asking to be, have this put on the ballot, that's also fairly common. It's much more common in the Western states where it's easier to do that. And I think one thing that's interesting is that you see that in California in particular, a lot more private money ends up going into stadiums and stadiums are kept around for longer. And I think a big piece of that is that you have to go, you know, it's very easy to put a referendum on the ballot out there. So, you know, it's not like you can just go and say, okay, we're going to lobby the city council, we're going to lobby the county commission, we're going to lobby the state legislature, and then that gets done. You have to actually go for a vote. And these things fail a lot more when it's up for a full public vote. You know, one of the interesting things when we first started researching this, my co-author Joanna Kagan and I, you know, almost three decades ago, was that, you know, we expected, oh, you know, the reason why this is happening in city after city is just sports fans are so desperate to keep the team that they're demanding that their elected officials, you know, do something about it. And it's not the case at all, right? I mean, there certainly are some sports fans who will be like, you know, we want to make sure the team doesn't leave. I'm a sports fan, right? I feel that too. And, you know, if a team threatens to go somewhere, but mostly the sports fans are saying, we already pay enough in ticket prices. We don't want to have to pay with our taxes as well. Mm-hmm. So it's very common to see these sort of, you know, citizen campaigns to try to, you know, force a public vote. It's not as frequent that they succeed because, again, in a lot of the country, it's very hard to get something put on the ballot. But we'll see what happens in D.C. You know, I mean, yeah. There's an interesting push.
Now, in Kansas City, just as an example, last year they defeated a referendum that would have raised sales tax to fund a new stadium for the Kansas City Chiefs and a stadium for the Royals. Now, they voted it down, even though the Chiefs have won Super Bowls. They're arguably one of the best teams in the league, which gives you pause. What do you think about the fact that the Browns, arguably not one of the best teams in the league, are looking to do this new stadium when Kansas City, with the Chiefs, couldn't even get a stadium built?
Right. Well, the argument cuts both ways, right? I mean, if you've got a team that is doing very poorly, you can say, well, you know, we're doing so poorly, we need a new stadium in order to compete. Mm. If you're a team that's doing really well, you can say, well, you know, we've won Super Bowls, we obviously deserve a new stadium. But, you know, the counter argument to that is you've won Super Bowls, you're doing fine, you clearly have plenty of money.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you should be putting up more money of your own. The interesting thing in Kansas City, of course, is that last spring, the voters voted down those two deals, and then the owners of the teams immediately went to the state of Kansas next door, right,
mm-hmm.
and said, "We, you know, give us a proposal for what you would put into a new stadium," and got a promise of you know, a whole bunch of tax kickbacks there. Came back to Kansas City, and now there's talk about putting things back on the ballot again in Kansas City, Missouri, to fund a stadium there, or, you know, or two stadiums for the Chiefs and the Royals. So, you know, again, this is all absolutely standard. You know, team owners know that if you don't succeed the first time, you can threaten to move, you can negotiate, you know, play off different states and different localities against each other. And, you know, you can, if need be, wait until the elected officials change, right? You're going to own the team for a long time, probably. And, you know, the mayor is not always going to be mayor. So you can, you know, wait a few years and see if you can try your luck then.
Now, not all of you mentioned, you know, that there's different ways to do this. They don't all ask for public handouts. The owner of the Los Angeles Rams privately financed $5 billion for a football stadium. Is that a rarity?
Yeah, it's more unusual. And again, I think there's two things, right? One is it's California, and there was no way that Stan Kroenke was ever going to get a publicly funded stadium in Los Angeles. Los Angeles was clearly not interested in doing that. And if they had tried to, there would have been a referendum campaign and it would have gotten defeated.
Mm-hmm.
And the other piece was he just really, really wanted to go to LA, mm-hmm. you know, and was willing to spend billions of dollars to do it. There's a lot of debate about whether or not he's ever going to see that money back. But again, that's not our problem, right?
As right.
taxpayers, as sports fans, as any of those things, if he wants to spend his money on that, that's fine. So yeah, it's not impossible. It's not, you know, it does happen. It happened with the Golden State Warriors. It happened with the San Francisco Giants. You'll notice I'm naming all West Coast teams,
yeah.
Seattle Kraken. Occasionally there's one elsewhere, Orlando City football team, a soccer team, was mostly private money. There's occasional places here and there, but it really does have to do with how much pushback there is, right? You know, if a team owner thinks that they can get $500 million, $1 billion or whatever from the public, then that's what they're going to be going after. And they'll keep coming back and back and back until they, you know, can get something close to that.
And there's also novel approaches to this, like the Buffalo Bills. They have fans who can, like, quote unquote, buy a piece of stadium debt. How is that? I mean, that sounds odd, but how's that work?
That's extremely odd, and I really don't think anyone understands why that's a benefit. You know, that you can, yes, you can own the stadium debt, but it's, you know, no different from owning any other kind of, you know, bond issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bigger piece, obviously, of the Bills deal is that it was about $1 billion in state and county money,
mm-hmm.
You know, money that is not going to other things in Buffalo, which has other needs, and you know, I think on top of that, the fans of the team are going to have to pay personal seat license fees in order to buy tickets, which, so they're going to be having to put up money on top of that. It's a pretty large public subsidy there, and it really kind of upped the ante for other teams, right? Right after that, you saw the Baltimore Ravens and Orioles get over $1 billion combined for renovations. You saw the Tennessee Titans get over $1 billion for a new stadium. And, you know, that's the problem, is that every time you get a new stadium with a higher bill, that it, you know, really makes it, well, these guys down the road are getting $1 billion. Why shouldn't we?
Why isn't there more talk about renovating what's already there? Why do they continue to pursue the new? You know, I can make Ohio State University's stadium is 100 years old. I can make a case in point of that. They do charge a fee on every ticket called the stadium preservation fee that they use for upgrades. But they're sticking with the old stadium.
Yeah, I mean, stadiums largely don't fall down, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they're made of steel, and steel lasts a really long time. So the issue isn't about, you know, whether they're obsolete. It's about whether they're economically obsolete, as they say, which, as you might expect, is a euphemism for doesn't make as much money as we wished it did. So I think, you know, you do see talk about renovations. Look at the Bengals, you know, look at try to think of other teams that did that recently. But some teams do, you know, go back and renovate and say, oh, we're perfectly happy here, but we still want a large check to help, you know, improve things and make things to the, you know, put things to the point where we can make more money off of this. So it really is about what they think they can get, you know. And I think if they figure that they can get a new stadium for, you know, about the same price that they would pay for a renovated one, sure, why not?
Thank you to journalist Neil DeMoss, co-author of the book Field of Schemes: How the Great Stadium Swindle Turns Public Money into Private Profit. Thank you for joining us today, Neil.
Sure thing.
And coming up, we're going to talk with an economist on different ways stadiums are funded. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking this hour about sports stadiums building boom. Here in Ohio, the Cleveland Browns are seeking $600 million in public money, a bond package, during the budget process that's currently underway. The Cincinnati Bengals would like $350 million. When did the price of these massive complexes get so astronomically high, and why are taxpayers supplementing billion-dollar team owners? Joining us now to talk about the economics is Andrew Zimbalist, a professor emeritus of economics at Smith College. Welcome to All Sides, Professor.
Thank you, Amy.
So these stadium projects are so expensive, billion-dollar endeavors. Why have the costs escalated so much?
Well, the owners keep finding new ways to generate revenue. You know, 30 or 40 years ago, when the current stadium boom began, they discovered luxury boxes and club seating and catering and signage and corporate sponsorships. And to accommodate all of that, you need more building, you need more space, and you need more build out. More recently, with the advent and growth of sports betting, they have to wire their stadiums better so there can be proposition betting on individual plays. On top of all of that, there's the normal process of construction industry inflation. So they all come together, and when the public sector is willing to pick up some of the costs, the private sector, the owner of the teams, is more and more interested in more and more elaborate stadiums. If the funding were private, we would see less elaborate stadiums and stadiums that cost less as a general rule.
Yeah, and there's technology is playing a big role in this. You just mentioned there's a high cost for new high-tech scoreboards. The stadium has to be wired for Wi-Fi so everyone's phones work to place all those bets. Where is the line, do you think, between a good public investment and what's a risky public investment? Is there a way to draw a line?
Well, as a general proposition, on the basis of virtually unanimous econometric studies over the last 30 years, building a stadium or a new arena by itself is not an engine of economic development. It can be an engine of fiscal deficits, either at the city or the county or the state level. But there are special circumstances, and if the financing is done in particular ways, and if there aren't too many giveaways with regard to taxation, and if there's a reasonable rent that's being paid, and the city has certain characteristics, then all of those things together might yield a project or two or three that is either a break-even project or even marginally beneficial economically. But as a general proposition, These deals are not, from an economic point of view, not recommended.
Now, there are some stadium projects in the works that are privately funded, so it proves that it is possible to do it without public money. Is it, I mean, you chuckle, but like, is it just if the public money is willing, if the politicians are willing to make public funding a part of it, then why not, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, if you can get somebody else to pay for your workplace, you do it. And because of the power of sports in our country, and because of the power of the monopolies that are held by MLB and NFL and NBA and NHL, they get to play cities off of each other and extract these massive subsidies. That doesn't happen in Europe, where they have a different structure in the sports leagues and not as much monopoly power. But they have the power here, and they try to use it. Now, for a relatively smaller host city like Cleveland, Cleveland doesn't have as much bargaining power, I say, as Los Angeles does, or as New York does, or Chicago does, because the Haslams could probably move the team outside of Cleveland and have an economic situation that was more favorable. Now, there'd be all sorts of problems along with that, but they at least can put that out as an opportunity or as an option and use that to try to generate some leverage for themselves. Notably, in Los Angeles, or an adjacent suburb of Los Angeles, Inglewood, California, in part because of the bargaining power that the greater Los Angeles area has with vis-a-vis sports teams, the owner of the Rams, Mr. Stan Kroenke, had to spend $5 billion of his own money to build SoFi Stadium, where the Rams are playing. That was privately funded, and the infrastructure is largely privately funded as well. So it's certainly possible. It's harder for a place like Cleveland. And what Cleveland, in my view, needs to do is to look very carefully, not use a fluffy economic impact study by some hired hand, but look very carefully at the prospective economic changes that will occur and the costs that will be incurred as a result of subsidizing the stadium. And then they have to bargain hard. And it's certainly possible to bargain hard. You're not going to have as much leverage, again, as the big cities, but you have leverage.
Yeah, in Cleveland, I mean, there's all sorts of things going on, because it's not just building a new stadium. They're also moving the Cleveland Browns from the immediate downtown to a suburb out by the airport. Right. So the city and the county have multiple feelings about this. You know, it's not even just the money, but it's also, well, it is the money always, but it is also, there's feelings there too.
Well, yeah, you're kind of emptying out the Lakeshore property where the Indians used to play and the Browns used to play and still play. What are you going to do with that land? What's going to happen to that land in downtown Cleveland? Is there some wonderful hospital that can be built? Well, in that case, maybe it'd be good to take the team somewhere else. But if there's not such a concrete plan that's compelling, then what are you benefiting from by having a new area developed, a several hundred acre area outside, 15 miles outside of Cleveland? You certainly seem to be emptying out a revenue source from Cleveland. Money's going to get spent in the suburbs rather than in the downtown area. And it would, generally speaking, have a fiscal impact that would be not salutary.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about how to pay for new stadiums for professional teams, and who should foot the bill, and are they worth it? We're talking with Andrew Zimbalist, a professor emeritus of economics at Smith College. I want to play a clip from you from New York Governor Kathy Hochul. A few weeks ago, she gave an update on the new Buffalo Bills stadium that is getting finished.
This has a huge economic benefit for not just Western New York, but the state. And in fact, we calculated, this is before Josh Allen got the big pay increase, that by year 17, just our income taxes alone on the players who play here, by year 17, we'd be more than fully reimbursed as a state.
So if I'm understanding her correctly, the income taxes on the players' salaries is how the state is recouping their investment over time. Is this true? Is this viable?
Well, There are income taxes on the player, on the player's income. Roughly half of the games are played in Buffalo or Erie County. They play, it's actually in Orchard Park, just outside of Buffalo. But when they play games in New York, if half their games are played in New York, then roughly half their income taxes, or a little bit more, will be paid to New York, and that's helpful. They already have that source of revenue, so it's not a new source of revenue. unless, of course, the team were to move out of state. But in addition to the income taxes, there's a lot of costs that are being assumed by the state. And you have to look at both the cost side and the benefit side to decide what the net impact is. I haven't done that in a rigorous way for New York, but the numbers I've seen haven't been very encouraging.
Is that something that Ohio should consider? Is it, or is it just a way to talk about it? You know, you're saying that they always get the income tax, but now they're talking about it because people are wanting to know how they're going to get repaid for this money.
Right. Well, yeah, the fear is that the team can move out of the state, both in the case of Buffalo and the case of the Browns. If the team moves out of the state, that the income taxes on player salaries that have been accruing will no longer accrue. All I'm saying is that they have been accruing, and keeping the team there is not going to change that. That's not a new source of revenue. It's the old revenue source just continuing. In any event, when you're spending, as they're being asked to do in Cleveland and for the county and for the state, when you're being asked to put down $1.2 billion on a $2.4 billion stadium, that's a lot of money that's being committed. And so you have to offset whatever gains you perceive to against the expenditures. And the expenditures are going to go well beyond the $1.2 billion. There are probably different incentives, property tax incentives built in. There might be other subsidies built in. The local area is responsible probably for security and transportation expenses connected to it. Maybe also for garbage and other related expenses. There's probably going to be a capital expenditure fund that the local government has to contribute to. So there are a lot of different variables that are going to be at play here, and it requires a very serious and thoughtful study to figure out what is viable and what isn't. So generally speaking, on the economics end, it's not very appealing. And, you know, how are they going to rent in this day and age? How are they going to rent out the commercial space that they're thinking of developing? Does it really make sense to have two hotels in that area? The Browns are going to play 9 home games a year, roughly. That leaves 356 games or days when they're not playing. And sure, you'll have a Taylor Swift concert and a Beyonce concert and a Bruce Springsteen concert. And so now instead of nine events, we have what, 20 events or 25 events. Mm-hmm. But we're dealing with a base of 365 days. So there are lots of questions. When you talk about these mixed use developments around the stadium, particularly a football stadium where football is played much less frequently than the other major sports in the United States, how good is it for an area's development to have a, let's call it a 15-acre plot of land, be essentially dark for 340 days out of the year, or some similar number? Is that the kind of situation where a retail store or chains will want to go? Is it the sort of situation where, even though they talk about two hotels, will there actually be the investment? And if they do make the investment, will they be successful and will they be able to sustain themselves? How are you going to do commercial development there? So I think it's, you know, this is an enormously complicated story. And to have Nancy Hochul or some other politician stand up and proclaim the economic glories of this when all of the scholarly work is very, very skeptical, I think at the very least is disingenuous.
What about the intrinsic value of having the professional sports team in a community? Is there a way to put a value on that, of not losing the Cleveland Browns, even if they are in a suburb instead of downtown?
Well, there are some methodologies, contingent evaluation methodology or CVM, where you basically do very elaborate surveys to try to estimate what a team is worth psychically, socially, culturally to a community. Yes, you can do that. I don't think those are the most robust and compelling studies, but they might give you some idea of what the other advantages are. So if you can make an argument that economic, don't do this because you think it's a great engine of economic development, but do it because you love the Browns, because you love sports, because you think the Browns enhance the feeling of community in greater Cleveland. If you want to do it for those reasons, then you're right. Let's try to look at what is the value there. So that's obviously not a market value. You're not buying your happiness, or you're not buying community. But let's try to figure out and estimate it. And that's fine to include some estimates. You should do it with a good deal of skepticism, I think, or at least caution. But it's certainly a relevant question. Just because it doesn't pay off economically doesn't mean that it doesn't make sense. You know, New York City has Central Park. Is Central Park an economic agent or engine for the city? Mm-hmm. Does it spew out oil and dollars from 59th Street and Central Park East? No, it doesn't. It doesn't do those things. But it does provide a wonderful outlet for activities, for culture, for enjoying nature, for sports, and so on. And so most people would say, yeah, Central Park, the upkeep is absolutely worth it. Not because it's an economic engine, because it's culturally valuable. So that's something that I, sitting in Northampton, Massachusetts, can't tell the people of Cleveland, you know, how much value there is there. But I do believe there is some value, and it makes sense to think about it.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. But, you know, Cleveland did lose the Browns once, so they might be an interesting case study on how that feels. And then they got them back. So we'll see what happens. But I want to say thank you for your time. Andrew Zimbalist, sure. Professor Emeritus of Economics at Smith College. Thank you so much for joining us, Professor.
My pleasure.
And this has been All Sides with Amy Jurevich on 89.7 NPR News.